Hey everyone, this is the Macko and Cause podcast. Yes, I'm doing a bit of a cold open because I realized at the end of the interview, I forgot to thank and give a shout out to the two very important parties, entities, people of this podcast. First is Seat Giant. They're one of our Canadian partners on this show. And they're where you go to for any concert tickets, sporting event tickets, everything and anything in North America, seatgiant.ca. And all the tickets are in Canadian dollars, so you don't need to convert nothing. They're our Canadian partner. They guarantee every ticket to be legitimate. So just go to seatgiant.ca. I've used them in the past a whole bunch over the Christmas break. You should use them as well. And more importantly, use the discount code Bob and Matt at checkout. You will save money. We get a small kickback, which is great because podcast ain't free. SeatGiant.ca. And just as important, it is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. And I mean it, he's our lawyer. This isn't some sort of fancy read. He dealt with my last will and testament. Hopefully, eventually, he'll deal with Bob's. And what I like about Jeff is he's now a friend. And even before, when we were just getting to know him, very professional, but more importantly, took away any and all intimidation you may have about the law. Because especially most of us, we don't really know what's going on. And then we worry, are we going to be, you know, overcharged? Is this lawyer just out for his own good or her own good and not our own well-being? Well, that's the opposite with Jeff Pollock. Takes care of everything, goes the extra mile. He is my lawyer. He's sort of Bob's lawyer as well, and does a fantastic job, and you will just feel very safe and comfortable with him. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. 416-777-0088.
Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the 108th, don't know why I said the number, Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. Bob is away on vacation, but joining me, Jeff Fayette is in studio with me. Really appreciate, you might know him from his work with faceoffcircles.ca, hockey writer, analyst, and a guy who has covered the Leafs and the Marlies and just covers the bleep out of the Marlies, and I think does a fantastic job just covering hockey in Toronto. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. It's a great honor to be back on the air with you for the first time in quite some time.
It's been ages. I'm just Jeff, scale 1 to 10. How'd I do on your last name?
Pretty good. You did better than most. So okay. I'll give you like a solid like 8.5, 9.
You're a very nice marker. I wish you were my teacher for grade 8 French instead of Miss Nincevich.
I wish I was my teacher for grade 8 French. Oh. Or grade 8 and 9, whatever grade French.
God, I was so happy when I got to drop it. Like in high school, it was such a happy moment in my life.
Yeah. No, for me too, and it's kind of funny because I'm the one with the French last name who could probably use having that bilingual skill in their writing. So in hindsight, maybe I wish I pushed it a little bit further, but it's the way they teach it is just you don't really like learn that much structure. So unless you're really willing to dive in, it gets a little torturous.
You do learn how to conjugate verbs. Yeah. Man, they are great at conjugating verbs. So we are doing this actually from the National Club. Because I just came from one meeting and you were nice enough to meet. And this is like a 1 minute walk from the subway. How, like, just from what you know about my douchey social media brand, how on brand is everything here?
It's extremely on brand. And you know what? The one of the reasons I was okay with this location is on brand to me. I was like, okay, I have a couple of hours off. Downtown is great for Pokemon Go stops.
Yep.
I'm leaving my phone on right now to collect items over the course of this podcast.
So you're on brand, young millennial with Pokemon. And I'm on brand. I'm at the National Club drinking wine.
Exactly.
Is there Pokemon in the National Club?
I don't think there's too many, but there's like, so they have like landmarks around the city where you can collect items or you can fight different Pokemon or go into gyms. And like the downtown core, there's like one every like two or three blocks, maybe even less. In my area, there's very few. Like the closest ones to me are like my local gym is the synagogue that's next door. Then there's like a bakery and there's like four in Baycrest Hospital. Okay. So I'm like the kid who like walks through the seniors hospital every so often to collect items and then get out before anyone notices.
Oh my God. Yeah. How many people do you think are in the hospital going, oh, my nephew is coming to, oh wait, no, it's not. It's some guy trying to collect. I don't even fully know how it works with the Pokemon. Maybe we'll talk about that at some point. a lot to get into. I want to do some specific Leafs. And by the way, for anyone listening, this will not be a review of the Leafs-Capitals game. We're taping this. This is 6:40 p.m. on Wednesday. The game's going to start. So we're going to go more big picture, talk about just big picture stuff with the Leafs, with the Marlies, Dubas, what's to come. Also, just a little bit about what it's like being a millennial in sports media and trying not only to get a voice, but to get a paycheck, which is probably more important than having a voice anyway. Yeah. So I want to get into all that. But first, explain to people, and you're not a player apologist, even though I find that, okay, we'll start here, actually. I find young people are a little bit more apologist towards the player. Apologist, wrong word. More empathetic towards the player than older school generation. And here's my generalization. Tell me how right or wrong I am. When you're younger, you more rebel against authority. You don't identify with the man. So then, you know, you're more with the player. As you get older, that can sometimes shift. So you might not be as much player apologist. Also, you know, in the 80s and 90s, everything was about crapping on the player. And I think that younger people now, there's almost an overcorrection where sometimes people rush too much to protect the player. I personally have total faith in William Nylander, but I'm curious about your thoughts because you've written about it many times about how Nylander, everyone, don't worry, relax, all will be good and right in the world.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how that all kind of went. You see a lot of people who are like, oh, he was greedy for holding out, for example. And I mean, like, there's some element of truth to the idea where it's like, yeah, he burned his own time in the season. It's probably one of the reasons why he's slumping a little bit out of the gate. But it's one of those situations where there's two sides to every story. And the Leafs know that they have all these guys who are coming up with big deals. You've got Mitch Marner, you've got Austin Matthews, you're gonna have the support players like Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Johnsson, Travis Dermott, all kind of coming up. So they need to do this well. And with Nylander, that was something where they had to get it bang on that first time. They had to set the tone, get exactly what they wanted, and they played hardball too.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the reality of things. And it's difficult because the Leafs come into this at a weird time where we're starting to get a better understanding of when players peak, when players are most valuable to their teams. And it's a lot younger than we used to think that it was. I remember when I was younger, the whole conversation was like, oh, you're probably entering your prime at like 27. You're there until like 31, 32. And then you slowly taper. And then when you're close to 40, you fall off. And it turns out, like, once you start looking at the data, even back then, and in hindsight, we should have looked at things like Gretzky and Lemieux numbers and be like, oh, well, they probably were good examples of this. All the greats were pretty much the same way unless scoring changed. Your prime is very early.
Yeah.
It's 23, 24 years old. So really, you're doing it on your second deal. And players are becoming more aware of this. And as more and more players get that opportunity at a younger age and they outperform those second contracts they get, it's less likely that the next generation will take the same kind of hit. Because why would you? By the time you get to unrestricted free agency, especially now, by the time all these kids, the Matthews, the Marners, the Nylanders, all get to 27, most of the league will have figured this out. Even the most old school of GMs will know that by 27, 28, you don't want to pay these guys long-term. You don't want situations where you get like a Milan Lucic, a David Backes,
you know what's
a David
funny?
Clarkson.
By the way, I had in my head right before you said it, I had Lucic just because Cirelli got fired today.
Yeah,
Lucic is like the classic.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's a guy who he put a lot of really tough hours into his body, and he started falling apart even earlier than some people thought he would. Like, I thought that contract was bad, but I thought he'd be pretty good for a little bit longer. What I didn't take into account for is obviously because he hits, he blocks shots, he fights and all that. Like, he's seeing his curve go even faster. GMs are going to become more aware of this. In baseball, you're already seeing it, where unless you're like a superstar, you're not getting paid as a veteran free agent anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're an NHL player, why would you accept a deal that doesn't serve you well? Why would you want
to 6 years, $5.2 million? Yeah. You know, or something like that for Nylander.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. If he would have taken something like that, that would have been a disaster for him because he would have lost his best years on a sweetheart deal. At this $7 million figure that he took, it's a little bit more than he probably would have got a few years ago in the same situation. but he's going to be more than a $7 million player in his prime. By the time it ends, he's still going to be in his late prime. So you're not getting any bad years out of it. It's unfortunate the Leafs finally figured out how to get good young players, just as everyone figured out that young players were valuable. But that's the reality they're in. They're going to have to pay a little bit more for them than previous generations might have been able to get away with. And I do get it from the player's perspective. You don't want to burn years where you're supposed to be making your most money.
Oh, yeah. And also, well, stick with Nylander for a second. Explain to people that are going, this guy, you know, bust or trade him or all those sorts of things. It's not even like the deep, crazy numbers. You don't even need those. You can just use points and his age when he got them. Just why people need to be more optimistic. For anyone who isn't, if you're not optimistic about Nylander, I get it. He has stunk in terms of a lot of the eye test and not a lot of the production. But sort of, if you could sort of explain to people, calm them down a little bit. Give them something, make them happy.
I mean, you just have to look at William Nylander before this year. It's as simple as that. This is a player who has had, when he was in Swedish Junior, he was one of the best Swedish prospects in history in terms of how he was producing points. When he went to the AHL, he was one of the best producers of all time for a teenager. Not a lot of teenagers in the AHL, but like he was compared to... I think Jason Spezza was the closest, and that before he was like the gold standard.
Yeah.
You come into the NHL, 60 points back-to-back seasons. 60 points is not easy to do in the NHL. Scoring's up this year, but most years, 60 points is an elite winger. By the time he was like midway through his second season, his current comparables, not like comparing to the same age, like his straight-up comparables were the Phil Kessels, Patrick Kanes, those top-end elite right wingers. He was already looking like someone who was an established star. You just got to look at that and say, this is a guy that we know has done this at a young age. This is a guy who has a track record of nothing but strong production. And there's no reason to think that it's gone away in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
He's not evaporated. He's not forgotten how to score goals. And then when you look at what he's generating on the ice, that's when you get into the more analytical stuff where you see that the Leafs are getting a better share of the shots since he's joined the lineup and since Matthews has come back. You see that, okay, well, look at what the shooting percentages and the save percentages are when he's on the ice as well. The Leafs are not getting goaltending like they were before he showed up. People will compare the two records and say 28-0 and then whatever it is.
9-9-2 or
something like that. And they'll be like, oh, this is proof that he's messed something up in the room or whatever. But all their shot metrics are better both offensively and defensively. The biggest difference is that they were getting, I believe it was 930 goaltending before he showed up. So like
that's pretty high.
I think it was second in the NHL. And now with Anderson, who was hurt for a lot of it, with Sparks, who was hurt for a lot of it, Hutchinson played quite well. He carried his weight and then some. Even if it was just for those few games, he paid off that draft pick that they spent on him, because he did a heck of a lot better than I would have expected Kazimier Kaskisuo or any of the other options that the Leafs had below to have done in that stretch. But I think their goaltending in that stretch was like 890. Like, we're talking like great numbers in like 1991. it's below league average in a season where league average is the lowest it's been since the start of the cap era. So they were not getting any. They're not getting any solid performance in net. And in Nylander's case, when the Leafs are on the ice, they're shooting at around 5%. That's way too low. That's about half of league average. And he's playing with good players. And we've seen that there's a few of these guys who have been on cold streaks at the same time. You have Austin Matthews, who's been a little bit cold. Andreas Johnsson's been a bit cold. Kasperi Kapanen's been a bit cold. And those guys have all kind of started scoring recently. Matthews is the exception. We'll see what happens tonight. But even when the guys around him aren't getting those opportunities, it could just be a little bit of luck, because they're still generating shots. They're still generating scoring chances. They're still coming from close areas. And the last thing I'd probably point out there is he's not the only one in this group who's gone on a streak like this. Mm-hmm. In Matthews' rookie season, he had a 13-game streak where he had no goals.
Yep.
Mitch Marner last year, Mitch Marner being the best player on the Leafs this year in terms of offensive production, probably one of their best players in overall play. He had a 31-game stretch last year where he scored one goal.
Yeah.
this stuff happens. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Phil Kessel when he was here too. He would go on those streaks too. And I know Kessel's a bit of a polarizing figure, and I figure that most people
is
who,
he?
I'm just a little. And I figure that most people who are anti Nylander right now would be the people who wouldn't have liked Phil then. So maybe that's not the best argument. But he's been one of the best right wingers in the NHL over his career, and he's gone through those ups and downs too. This is stuff that happens with players.
Yeah,
and goals are not consistent. And prior to this year, Nylander was probably the most consistent Leaf. His longest consecutive games without a point prior to this year was 3 games. He had remarkable consistency, and I think that he's a guy who can get there again.
All right, so people listening, you know, things are going to be better. And I think part of it is that we don't, like sports fans, we often don't like the idea of luck.
No.
We like the idea of manifest destiny, that you work, you know, Babcock says work hard and everything will, you know, will just, it'll take care of itself. And that we don't like the idea of luck. We like the idea of control. We like the idea that the coach is in control and the players are in control. And if they will it, it shall happen. When no one likes luck, when luck, it just means, hey, man, sometimes things are going to be randomly bad for you.
Yeah, and it's funny because luck is probably what makes hockey so entertaining. Hockey is the luckiest sport. There's been studies done on this. Team sports are the luckiest, and what has the what is most influenced just by sheer random odds. And hockey's up there because...
Well, NBA would be last.
Yeah,
NBA would have no luck.
NBA is very close to last. I think some of the more individual sports, like golf, tennis, those obviously would have even less control of luck. But the thing, obviously, if the NBA is one, there's a lot more scoring, so percentages find their way to regress, they find their way to even themselves out. And because it's so reliant on stars, your star players are on the court so much more, they can control those games. Whereas with the NHL, you have a big disparity in players. There's 20 guys who are all... Okay, actually, I wouldn't even say big disparity. If anything, more of a smaller disparity, where there's just more of a rotation to work with. You can't have your star guys on all the time, and you have average players who are going up against each other, replacement level players, probably more replacement level players in hockey than we care to admit. And things will just happen with them. And because it's a game where only five and a half goals are scored every game on 60-something shots, sometimes a puck trickles in. Sometimes a goalie manages to grab something that kind of squeaks, that's about to squeak across the line. It's just things that happen in a game where there's not a lot of scoring and a lot of opportunity.
I'll get into the Marlies and Dubas because, man, the Marlies... who, like, the development of players there, I mean, you can just see the impact that's on the Leafs. But once Marner and Matthews get their deals, woo, you're going to be relying on the Marlies just even more to find the next, that one 20-goal year from Connor Brown and the higher-end version, the Andreas Johnsson, and, you know, obviously Kasperi Kapanen. But let's talk a little bit about you. I like to bounce back and forth a little bit because, you know, the podcast with the guests, it's been, you know, Sean Fitzgerald or Dave Feschuk, Jonas Siegel, guys like that. A little bit more of the mainstream media. What'd you call The Athletic? Is The Athletic mainstream or is it somewhere in between?
No, I think they're mainstream now. Just because their website doesn't change the fact that I think they have something like half of the Professional Hockey Writers Association are writing for The Athletic now. Like, they could all go into a room, decide who's going to win a trophy and influence it. Like, they can be like, you know what?
Really?
Matt Nieto's going to win the Hart, and he'd have a very good chance of winning the Hart. He'd at least be a finalist. So they're mainstream. They're the paper with venture capital money and a national audience.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect. I think they do fantastic work.
That's not disrespectful. Venture capital money, that's all good. Money is nothing wrong with that.
It's a great model and very... I'm very proud for all my friends who contribute to it, to see it grow, but it's definitely mainstream.
Yeah. So then for you, how did you get started?
I was a kid who thought he was going to get rich quick off the internet. Like, honestly, I was 12 years old when I was like, I'm going to start building websites.
How old were you when you were 12? What year?
2004-ish.
Okay. No, just for context for people.
I'm 27 now.
Yeah. Okay. So then 12, thought you're going to get rich.
Yep. So I started just making random websites, blogs, finding all these little ways to make some extra cash. I was really big into, do you remember Neopets?
Neopets. I'm 16 years older than you, so no.
Okay, so it was like this website where you like created your own pets and you played little games to like make yourself money. I learned how to cheat on there and use like programs to automate stuff. So I would just rip the system off and like sell all my points on the black market. Yeah. So that was like my first real income was selling Neo points on eBay for $15 per million points.
There you go.
It was great times. Wild West. There's rules on that site that were created because of 10-11 year old me. It was incredible. But yeah, so like I just felt like making websites. It was just something that was a neat thing to do, a fun little challenge. I like computers, but like nothing really stuck. But because I had a web hosting service, I was like, okay, I'm gonna make a hockey blog. I'm gonna go find some friends who want to write with me. So
yeah.
I honestly approached a whole bunch of people on HF boards, which is an old hockey message board, which still exists now, but isn't as popular as it was in its peak, thanks to social media kind of taking over that conversation. And we just went for it. And there were some really interesting times there. Like I think for our trade deadlines, we used to get huge amounts of traffic because without there being Twitter, you would go to a live blog who would constantly update you on what's going on. And that's what we would do. And like I would be in high school kind of sitting there like running to, we're saying I needed to go to the washroom because I wasn't feeling well, running to the library, logging in and putting in whatever information I can find in 5 minutes, or even like making stuff up at some points, actually guess some stuff right. Which really helped us. So like back then we would have like trade deadlines where we'd have like 200,000 people log in, which as a kid you feel like a rock star when you're doing that. And we launched a message board to go with it, and someone eventually asked me if I wanted to sell it, and I probably should have, but I thought it was more popular than
you were.
I was
young, you were idealistic.
Yeah, they were like, they were like, do you want $10,000 for your hockey message board? And I'm like, I should have said yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah, no, because message boards were a big thing then. Twitter wasn't huge. Like HF boards, that site I mentioned before, like I'm pretty sure when they sold back then, like they got like high six figures for it because it was one of the 100 biggest message boards period in the world, and it was just about hockey and hockey prospects. So I just kind of like built from that, and I managed to get very lucky in what social media stuff I stumbled on. So like when Dig was really big, I would submit a lot of my stuff on there, and I became friends with a lot of the top users there. And when something hit the friend page, that was an automatic like 10,000-15,000 views. I ran a hockey YouTube channel before the NHL did, where like I would literally...
Would you grab videos and things and throw it up there? And
yes.
Highlights, and things like that?
Yeah, and it wouldn't even just be downloading from the internet. Like I had like a $20 capture card I bought at like a off-brand computer store here in Toronto, plug my cable box into and would sit there and record games or record Sports Center and just get everything up there. And it was,
is that how that works? I've always wondered on Twitter when, like, you know, when I see, you know, the bloggers and they throw videos and things up so quickly, I always wonder, how the hell do you do that?
It depends on the person. A lot of people will use Game Center or they'll use Streams. My setup is a lot more complicated because I like to be the first one when I do it.
Yep.
So I have my cable box hooked up into like a semi-legal splitter that gets rid of the copyright protection.
By the way, hold on, wait. I did enjoy, and you'll continue, but I did enjoy the term semi-legal.
Yeah.
Continue.
You can find it on Amazon, and it's not supposed to do that. Then it goes into another splitter because I have a lot of devices. Then it goes into my Xbox. My Xbox goes into a video game capture card that's in my computer, which puts everything into my computer. So I have a direct live feed of the game coming from my cable box. I don't have to wait the 55 seconds for it to show up on Game Center. I've timed it. I know TSN Go speed. I know Sportsnet Now speed. I know all those different speeds of how far behind they are. TSN, by the way, is the fastest of the bunch. They are 8 seconds behind.
All right. It is for TSN. Go yeah. Bell. Screw you, Rogers. By the way, I need to say everything you said over the last 50 seconds. Oh, no. I've got about 20% of it, but it's damn impressive.
Yeah. Well,
like what you said is damn impressive, and I got some of it. So then how did you get to just – because I'm a content junkie.
Yep.
Just doing radio. Radio is all about content. So, you know, I'll get a TSN and ESPN and then my favorite writers and The Athletic. And then I'll go to the bloggers and I'll go to your stuff and, you know, or Pension Plan Puppets or like so many other, like I go to every site just looking out just for, sometimes you need something to stimulate the brain.
Yep.
And give you an idea you haven't thought of. So, you know, I read plenty of your stuff. You know, hell, I think you introduced me to Miro Altonen. So I just wonder, how did you get to the Marlies?
That was pretty interesting. At that point, I was running a Leafs site separate from the original hockey blog I had done, because the people I was working with, they were all like going to university, kind of figuring out their adult
jerks.
Lives. Yeah, you know,
adult lives.
Yeah, they're real jobs and everything. Yeah.
Now they're working for marketing for Chevrolet or something.
Like that. Yeah. So I started a Leafs site, and then a friend of mine was like, okay, hey, let's have you considered doing a Marley site? I'll get you introduced to somebody in business ops, which we did, and they were like, okay, well, you've been coming to some games, you seem interested in this, we'll give you like a ticket every game if you want to get in. I'm like, yeah. Okay, cool, that's pretty good. Did that for about 2.5 seasons, kind of just did it, just post-game articles, what I thought about what was going on in the game, just kind of my observations. Still very, very green to the idea. Wasn't really that big into analysis. And then I think they had their first game of the year, Canada Center, in, I want to say, 2011. Yep. It was a 2011-2012 season. And it was like, okay, well,
the good times. The good years.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, I can't bring my laptop into the ACC seats. And I'm like, okay, we'll get you a media credential for this game. And I'm like, okay, cool. That's great. I did it. I did the whole thing. Talked with Berkey a little bit. It was a nice little time, which also...
By the way, hold on. I'm going to interrupt because you go on. You talk for a long period of time, so I got to sometimes pounce on
it. Oh, for sure.
You said Berkey?
Yeah.
You're going full hockey with Brian Burke. You're going full nickname with him.
Well, no, it's great because I told him that story like 6 months ago when he was at a Marley's game. And that was his immediate like, okay, I like this kid.
Yeah.
Because he knows this, he has a story about how his first question had to be with me. So now whenever he shows up at a Marley's game, he like perches up and talks to me about like all this random stuff. It's great. Like, and there are times where I can disagree with him and he just gives me a smile. I think I might be the only young kid you're gonna find.
Hold on. Okay, now we're going down this. What are the conversations with millennial 27-year-old Jeffler? Yeah. Or just Jeff, with Brian Burke. Like, that's the odd couple right there.
Well, he'll just be like, what do you think of this player? Or here's this guy I liked. Or
that's
like,
great.
It'll be like Marley's in Lehigh Valley, and he'll be like, oh, I played on the Providence Flyers in 1978 or whatever. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I'll pretend to have not known that.
Yeah.
But cool story. Or it'll be like him being like, oh, I thought Andrew Nielsen would be a heck of a player. And I'm like, well,
yeah.
No, I don't see it.
Do you get nervous when you disagree with Brian Burke?
Because
I do.
I mean,
you have to remember, I'm a coward. So.
I think because he's been kind of fun with those conversations. I always try to be respectful when I disagree with someone in a conversation like that. So I don't have any issue with that. I'm always curious to hear what the other perspective is. So it's never like, oh, you're an idiot for this one, Berkey.
And that's fantastic. Just because to me, it's always about the other perspective.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's why I try to just read every side of it. And all right, we'll go on a bit of a tangent here, but at some point I wanted to talk about just Twitter and social media. And the one thing I find that is that and I'm going to go old man here, but I'll go and rip the mainstream and just and my own generation. But when Brian Burke says something that people disagree with, and by that I mean people 30 and under, wow, do they get dismissive and often very condescending towards someone like Brian Burke. And I'm always amazed by that. The same way with, like, you know, when you're a hardcore fan, like we met one of the bartenders here today at the National Club.
Yep.
And he'd be the sort of guy that would go on Twitter and say, trade Nylander.
Mm-hmm.
I would never trade Nylander in a million years. And not in a kabillion years. In fact, I didn't even mind the money he got, because eventually he'll start scoring and the salary cap will go up. And by the end of the contract, it's going to be a great contract.
Yep.
We're going to be happy with it. But at the same time, when that fan says trade Nylander, I never pounce on it and go, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a dumb fan. You should thank God you're never running the team. Like, I don't understand in social media, and we could start with this with Brian Burke, the dismissive, sometimes condescending nature of social media from under 30 to, you know, the Brian Burkes of the world.
It's complicated, and I think it really...
You're right, it is. There's one answer.
Yeah, and it really kind of depends on the subject and the person, too, because there are some, like, of the old school types where I would never say anyone deserves vitriol on social media.
Which I want to get to, because you've received like far more than you should have when all you really are is a hardworking person that loves hockey. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, so no one ever deserves like true personal vitriol. At the same time, I can see why some guys get a track record of being disagreed with or kind of responded to in a somewhat condescending way because they'll say something that's kind of looking for the reaction. And mm-hmm. and I say this as someone who's probably guilty as charged of that too. There are times where if someone's going to kind of give me a smarmy answer back on a hot take, so to speak, where I'm like, yeah, okay, you know what, that's fair.
If someone's smarmy at you, then yeah. Have at it. Yeah. I think what a lot of it is, like, sometimes I just, and maybe it's just I'm showing my age, I'm always amazed that people decide to jump on things like when people go, I can't believe Don Cherry said that. I'm like, it's Don Cherry.
Yeah, yeah.
He always says. It's the great Chris Rock line. That tiger didn't go crazy. That tiger went tiger.
Yeah.
You know, when the tiger attacked one of the magicians whose names I always forget.
Yeah. But that's kind of the reality of social media now too. Because the quote unquote dunk has become so popular now, the fact that it is a way to get retweets, likes, get into people's timelines, you kind of see more of it. Again, I'm not gonna say this from a high arching perch. There are times where I'll go for those moments too.
Yeah.
I think the bar is kind of try to avoid it being a personal thing, and I definitely think that you want to be informed on what the person's track record is. Yeah. Like if the person's track record is consistently to create trouble with the words that they're saying or the opinions that they're saying, if they're being said in bad faith, I can get why they get the responses. If someone's like back and forth and sometimes they'll say the right thing, sometimes they won't, it just turns out that there's a track record of sometimes I agree with them, sometimes I disagree with them, and there's never like a personal implication behind it. I think that requires a bit more of a measured conversation.
Yeah, which by the way can be so hard on social media.
Yeah,
the measured conversation.
Yeah,
I always get amazed by the level of vitriol because it's sports. And like I don't know how much you want to talk about it because we've had some private conversations about you and I. I'm shocked by the fact that you've had any go kill yourself. I'm so confused by it. I don't even know where to take this to in terms of the right question. But why the hell are you at all a target for, you know, I could see people going, you know, shut up, or you're a player apologist, or Nylander needs to be traded. Fine. If we want to go the sports yelling, great. But not the personal text. That just seems so confusing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's confusing to me too, in the sense that, like we were talking before, even if I'll get into something that's a bit heated sports-wise, I'm not going to try to attack anybody's character as a person. Certainly, like, if you're going to do something that clearly makes it obvious that you're... That you're hateful or that you have some sort of really deep flaw in that regard, and you're saying something that's extremely aggressive to me.
Yeah,
I will call that out as like, no, that's wrong.
As you should.
Yeah, and that to the people who kind of do this stuff, they see that as the argumentative being the bigger bully thing, because there's this thing on social media where if you have a follower base and this argument happens, you're the bully for engaging it because the platforms are lopsided. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but whatever the case, I think for a lot of people it's just that I've been around for so long, and it's a situation where a lot of these people have kind of seen me start off as that smarmy, very, very argumentative, sometimes personal teenager. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah.
Young me was.
And by the way, you're supposed, like, when you're a teenager, who you are at 17 is not who you are now at 27. I mean, I think, yeah, one of my favorite quotes, I don't know if you ever heard of Norman Lear,
yep,
who invented like All in the Family and all that kind of stuff. He had this great quote. He said this when he was like 94. And he said, I'm a different person now than I was 6 years ago. And that filled me with so much joy, the idea that even at that age, we can still reinvent and we still change. So whatever smarmy version you were at 17, Man, full free pass. Yes. You're 17 years old.
I would never say free pass. There's a lot of things that you can
half
do.
Half pass? Semi-pass?
Semi-pass, I think it depends on what the things are. Like, if you're just a loudmouth who says you're an idiot a whole bunch of times when you're 17, I think that's
fair.
That's kind of fine. There are conversations that I've seen recently that when you look at the political world and if you've seen the things with the kids wearing their hats and mocking the native guy Nathan Phillips, like that I have a bit of trouble being like, oh, they're 17. Whether you agree or disagree with their standpoints, that's very much like you've made that call at 17.
That one got so politicized because then you saw there was other videos where maybe they weren't as evil as they were.
And then the other videos and that were like other, maybe they're even another, worse.
You know what the main problem there is, and this is not even being political because, hell, I voted NDP in the last provincial election, and I voted conservative sometimes. The problem is that kid had such a punchable face. I mean, that's one of the main problems. Hat choice as well, but very punchable face.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get too far into that, but the point is, like, there are things that you can do at that age where it's like, yeah, it's going to be hard to excuse those unless you have a radical maturation, but, like...
Yeah.
I think to a lot of people, they still kind of see me as the kid that was around on social media before, right, in its kind of infancy, and they've never really been like, oh, this is a separate person. Oh, this is someone who's kind of grown. I wonder if I came in today with the same opinions and none of my prior kind of come up in growth, how people would react to that. I don't think it would be as abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of people too, it's one of those things where I do kind of unfortunately represent a lot of this kind of modern hockey talk in the city. And like, I probably shouldn't. There are much smarter people in the city than me who cover this game. There are much more measured people who do, and people who are doing better work. I shouldn't by no means be a face, but I think just because I'm constantly in the conversation, because the platform is big,
yeah,
and because I'm not going to back down if someone's going to get aggressive on it. That kind of keeps me there. So and I've seen people say it. It's like, well, it's because when you're arguing against Jeff, you're arguing against the idea of like the millennial blogger, all the stereotypes of the stats guys, so on and so forth. Which, I mean, if it's meant that it lessens the blow on some other people, I would take that, because no one kind of deserves some of the treatment. Like, I'm not going to get into details on how crazy it's gotten, but there are times where it'll be like,
it's shocking.
I'll
say it for you. It's shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, like having people track down phone numbers, or like if I don't talk on Twitter for a bit, they'll go find like my profiles on like Reddit or Facebook or whatever the case. I've had people tell me in person that my work is garbage, or it's causing like there was one time like during the 16-17 season. That's when I had the whole "the Leafs are actually good" hashtag.
Yeah,
because I was super into the idea of the Leafs being a playoff team. They had added three superstar rookie forwards, Austin Matthews obviously being a center. They had good underlying numbers.
It was great. I love that hashtag. Leafs are actually good.
Yeah, it was a way of saying that you guys are sleeping on the Maple Leafs. I think they're going to be a playoff team.
Yeah,
and I flat out said of the night of the home opener, this team's making the playoffs, and they're going to try to make a cup run in the next year or two, save the tweet. It's one of the very few tweets I kept when I wiped out most of my tweets a few weeks back. But that was a very abrasive, polarizing thing. It was a super, super, super abrasive, polarizing thing, because when they would go on a losing streak, people would lose their minds in mockery and this and that and that and that.
Think about that for a second. You didn't tweet out, "abortion is murder." Now, that kind of thing, you're going to get a lot. You said, hey, this hockey team, those young guys over there, hey, they're good. They're going to make the playoffs. Yeah. That's the part that shocks me.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to get like the worst trolls that have gone after you or gone after female sports broadcasters or female on the Gamergate or all these other things. I would love to see what is their demographic. I want to know what's the average age, income, where they go. Like, I want to know who the hell are these very lonely people? Because here's the thing. we're on this planet for not a very long period of time.
Yeah, so to get worked up over something so trivial.
Like that!
Yeah. So yeah, that season was just like super, super weird about it.
I remember
in January coming into the Leafs media, the Marlies media room, and Justin Bourne of The Athletic, he was the video coach still at the time there.
Yep.
And he looks at me and he's just like, Jeff, you caused some trouble on the internet today. And I'm like, I have not looked at my phone. I have actually, this is like the first day in a long time I have not looked at my phone all the way down here. And I flip it out and there's all these people like screaming about whether or not I had the right to be the guy who gets credit for them doing well on this hot streak and like getting super argumentative about it. I'm like, okay, that's not great. Like I will not even lie. I went into one of like the washroom stalls and had like a mini panic attack over it. It wasn't
really.
It wasn't great. It was because it's jarring to be like, oh, like this entire community that I consider myself a part of is like melting down right now over this. And then a few weeks later, they go on a cold streak and they start losing games. And it gets to the point where I couldn't even look at my phone. Like I was like, oh, if they're down 2-0, I'm turning it off. I'm going out for a skate with my friends and just ignoring it. Towards the last game of the season, I had a guy outside the Air Canada Center, like his buddy had to like pull him away from me because he wanted to fight me over the fact because he thought that I put too much pressure on the team with this hashtag, and that the reason they faced Washington instead of getting a weaker opponent was because they had succumbed to the pressure.
Now, hold on, this
is a team that everyone thought would finish in 28th to start the year.
Now, to be fair, I remember I went on air and I blamed you as well. I mean, clearly you, oh my God, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's weird. And some people will be like, okay, well, haters mean you have a good thing going. They're better to have.
Sure.
Better
to have emotion than apathy. I get that. It's still, though, it just feels misplaced emotion.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm kind of getting at is I disagree with the idea that haters mean you're doing something right, that any publicity is good publicity, all this stuff. Like, it's rough. It's draining. There are times where, like, I want to get away from it for a few days. And I don't, like, it makes me not want to do what I do as much. And really, I just want to talk about, like, my favorite hobby, my favorite sport.
Yeah.
It is what it is, and you kind of learn ways to get better.
By the way, with it. I want to say I'm sorry because you said it is what it is. No one has ever used the expression it is what it is to describe something good.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's also some really supportive people in the community who will go the bat for me, who do support my work, and those people make it worth it. Yeah. I will fully say that. As much as I just when said the internet can be the worst, it can also be the best. The fans at these arenas, at pretty much everywhere, the people who are supportive of it make it worthwhile. They make it fun. They make it something that I want to do every day. So there's the conflict there, and I wish it were more of the good than the bad, a higher ratio of good than it is now, because I think it's still more good than bad. I wish it were that. Unfortunately, it's not where I would like it to be, but I'm happy for the positive stuff that's there.
Yeah, it's good summation. And I mean, the only thing I'll say to anyone listening, I don't agree with everything that Jeff writes. There are definitely times.
I don't agree with everything I write. I go back a few months later and I'm like, oh, well, that was wrong. But that's the point. You want to learn from that.
But man, my thing in the end is, okay, is there a lot of content? Is it good content? Is the dude working hard? Yep. All right. Well, moving on, because there ain't going to be no vitriol. We'll get to face-off circle and all this sort of stuff. But as I said, bounce around. Can the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup this year?
Sure. I mean, first off, the easiest thing to go to is what we were talking about a few minutes ago. If you make the playoffs, it all kind of comes down to a dice roll after that.
Yeah,
that's the baseline. If you're there, it's a total crapshoot. There's some ways to influence it, but if they squeak in as a second wild card, or they come in storm,
get out of here, shut up right now, or second wild card,
or they
shut your dirty mouth,
or they storm up and take over Tampa. Either way, okay, it's the
that
same kind
come
of thing.
As well.
Yeah, no, wherever they stand, they have an opportunity to win. Any team that makes the playoffs has an opportunity to win. That's almost a fault, but it's also a positive from an entertainment perspective. If you're managing a team, you hate that. If you're a fan of the game, you love that hockey can be like that.
Can this, when you look at this roster, is this roster good enough to win a Stanley Cup? Putting luck aside, taking luck and, hey, anyone can do it in the playoffs. this roster.
Yes. I genuinely believe that they're probably the second best team in the league behind Tampa Bay. They've got an incredibly deep forward group who are extremely creative. They're very intelligent. I know that's a very vague description, but I think that's something that Kyle Dubas has worked very hard on with this team, and Brendan Shanahan and everybody involved in the front office, even some of the people who have departed in the past year or so.
Oh, stop talking about how much you love Mark Hunter. I'm tired of every one of your pro Mark Hunter columns. Just once, could you say something nice about Dubas?
You've totally not been reading my timeline today. There was a great one on the subject of Hunter, though I've given him his positive traits too. There's a good article on faceoffcircle.ca about the pros and cons of his time here and what exactly he accomplished in his style. But besides the point,
just been a jackass.
And he's a guy who does fall under this line of wanting high IQ players, guys who can read plays, get into position, and use their talents to get the puck and do things with it, make plays with it. And they've built that team that's full of all these intelligent brainiac type players, like hockey brainiacs, super high hockey IQs. Like, you look at a guy like John Tavares, when they signed him, the first thing I'm looking at is this guy is exactly what they want every player on this team to be like, because he's always in position. He's always willing to work along the boards. He's willing to go in front of the net. It's all those little things that he does in his game. There's no like jaw dropping like dangles that he pulls off, or there are this crazy 8,000 mile an hour slap shot or anything like that. He just always knows where to be, and he makes things happen, and he will even make others know where to be even when they don't quite realize it. Like, he'll make the play for them, and they're like, okay, here's the puck. I guess I must put this in the net now. But the Leafs have developed themselves to be so much like that from their top players, like the Tavareses, the Matthews, the Marners, the Nylanders, even the guys like Connor Brown, guys like Par Lindholm, guys like even Frederick Gauthier. He's become a guy who's capable of doing.
Well, Marlowe, is he a smart guy?
Just a little. You got to beat a score. He's at 550, 560 now?
I just mentioned Marlowe because anyone under 30 hates Marlowe right now.
I like him, and I think the reason why he is not as liked is obviously his contract, but his contract made sense for the time that it was in. Mm-hmm. And I say that in the sense that, and this was something I talked about very much when I was writing out my Actually Good manifesto in 16-17, where one of the things you got to do to make a team better when you have that window where all your contracts are cheap is you got to try to acquire free star players. That's the easiest way to haul a team up if you've already got a strong nucleus. You use free agency to get the guys who are cheap.
Yep.
Who can kind of plug in holes, but and you go all in on the superstars. That's just the way that it works.
Stars and scrubs.
Superstars are underpaid in hockey. Hockey underpays star players more than any sport, I think. We have nobody who's made the league max since 2007.
And we won't, because Connor McDavid didn't take the max.
He took less than he was originally offered.
Here's the best thing, is that the NHLPA must hate this, but the max is not the percentage. It's Connor McDavid. He's the max. You cannot get, like, I can't wait for the first player that says I deserve more than Connor McDavid.
Yeah, well, look at how long the Ovechkin barrier lasted. Like, that lasted years until Kane and Taves kind of broke that by a little bit. And 10.5 still stayed the barrier for a little bit longer until Connor's deal, which, again, he took $1 million less than the Oilers were willing to give him. Mm-hmm. And he even took extra term, which as a star player of that caliber, you should not do.
Do you think deep down he regrets it? Probably. Now? Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense in a hockey perspective, and it doesn't make sense in a business perspective.
Wouldn't you love go, okay, Connor, we're in the circle of truth and honesty, and it ain't leaving this room. If you could leave Edmonton right now, would you leave Edmonton right now? I mean, I can't help it. He'd say yes, wouldn't he?
You would think so. And I don't, and like, that's not me being like, oh, well, Connor wants to be a Leaf at heart. which might still be true if you've seen his childhood. Yeah.
I bet he had some great Toronto Maple Leaf bedspread as well. Not just Tavares.
They did a special on McDavid a couple years back, like 2 years back, where they show like his childhood bedroom, and he still has like that Leaf gondola light that like everyone who's like 30 or younger in Toronto has had at some point in their life in the room. I certainly had one. He had like the same, a couple of the same posters that we all kind of did, like his room, and it was still like that. They weren't showing old photos. That was like the room in like 2016.
Imagine being an Oiler fan and someone showed you Connor's bedroom now, and somewhere there was a Matt Sundin's poster in the bedroom.
No, you gotta go like deeper than that. Like it's gotta be like a niche player. Like he's gotta have like Jonas Hoglund, Freddie Modine, like fist bumping together.
Yeah.
Or like a Michael Tellquist signed photo, or like a Marius Rakowski game use stick.
Are we gonna go down this road? Are we gonna go down obscure, like Gary Vaught jersey, you know, somewhere hanging in his closet?
Probably. Well, no, he has a number 97 Connor McDavid Leaf jersey with the C on it. There's a photo of it online.
He still has it. Get the hell out of
here. Yeah, yeah. It's like him getting it for Christmas, and he's like the happiest person in the world. And apparently he still has it, as far as I know. But besides the point, where did we originally start?
We were talking about the Leafs, can they win the cup?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and then we got to Marlowe.
So to quickly kind of finish the point on Marlowe, the point is you want to get top end stars whenever you can. You get them for free. Marlowe was a great case of that. They gave him the extra year, which is they'll have to figure out how that works this summer if he's willing to waive so they can dump that last year. That'll be a challenge. We'll see how they tackle that. But they did that not knowing what their next opportunity was. You don't go to that signing and be like, well, what if we get John Tavares next year?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to expect John Tavares.
No, that was an outlier.
The fact that Tavares showed up is the reason why the Marlowe contract looks bad. But you still make those moves when they happen. It's just like when you're like, what if the Stamkos board meeting went a little bit better and it was that 91 instead of this 91? I'm happier with this 91. No disrespect to Stamkos, who's also a great player. But you don't go and sit there and be like, maybe we shouldn't bother if that meeting, if we know JT's right around the corner. No, you go for the guy who's there. Marlowe was the guy who was there. He seems to have been a great leader for the team. He potted, I think it was 27 goals last year. He's a valuable contributor. So back to the team at large, that's an extremely deep team up top. Defense, I know, is a thing that everyone kind of concerns himself about. I think a lot of that is how they're utilized
They're 10th in goals against.
Yeah, which shout out to Frederik Andersen, who's had an unbelievable year, because that is 10th. The biggest reason that they are 10th in goals against.
Yeah.
They are actually conceding less shots over the past month or so since Nylander's come back and Matthews has come back.
No, it's because Nylander's a defensive grunt. I mean, he's going to get it done.
Well, it's weird, but the team...
You didn't even bite on that. I was being so sarcastic.
No, but in a weird way, he does help with that because he's the guy who goes back and he carries the puck out of the zone. He makes sure that it gets away. It's not the chip and chase icing.
Yeah.
He is valuable to them giving up fewer shots.
Oh, yeah. No. If you get the puck on your stick, then you're going to get fewer shots.
People, well, it's because so many people say that he's not a 200-foot player.
He's the guy
who has to go the furthest back of any of the wingers. He's the guy who's the most supportive of the defense in their breakout of any of Toronto's wingers. He's not going to win a Selke anytime soon. He's not the second coming of Marian Hossa. But he is a 200-foot player in his own way. He has elements of what he's been instructed to do go all the way across the ice. So back to the defense, I think they've got three really good pieces. I do think that Morgan Rielly obviously speaks for himself this year in the running for the Norris Trophy. Incredible, incredible year. Really showing what he can do now that he's kind of entering his prime. Jake Gardner, I know, is taking a lot of heat lately, but he's still...
Jake is well above average defenseman.
He is a very good defenseman. I don't think he's quite as good as the... As like you, one of the things where when you first kind of get into analytics is you only have like a general idea of like the basic advanced stats, and your first impression there is like, oh my god, Jake Gardner must be like this Hall of Famer type dude because he's always getting the Corsis, his points are usually pretty good. He's besides this year good at exiting the zone, but obviously it's not all entirely that, and you can see the mistakes that he makes at times, which are part of the fact that he is so active with the puck. You're going to make mistakes when you have the puck so much, but he's still a quality number two defenseman on a lot of teams. That's a guy that you like to have. It's a guy that hopefully they find a way to have him stick around for a couple more years.
He's gone. He's this year's JVR. He's gone.
It's likely that he's gone. He's a guy that it makes sense for him to be this year's JVR. JVR shouldn't have been last year's JVR. I will defend that they should have cut ties sooner. That's one where they should have sold at the deadline because Andreas Janssen was ready for the role. I took a lot of heat for saying that. and then Janssen started cold this year, and people were like, see, Jeff is an idiot about it. Then Janssen started getting hot, and they're like, oh, Jeff, what's Jeff talking about? We all knew it. It's a cycle.
That must be delightful for
you. Yeah, I very rarely get the moment of credit. It's you're dumb. See, you were wrong. Oh, actually, we all knew that. it's great. So those two have been strong pieces for the team for a long time. Travis Dermott has really established himself as a top end defenseman. Yeah. Not in like he's not quite a first pairing guy yet.
But he's a good number two pairing.
Yeah, he's a very good number two
pairing. Not according to Mike Babcock, but he's a good two pairing.
Well, this is the issue is Babcock isn't really experimenting with how this defense works.
Well, I yell about it all the time on radio. It's like, okay, if the idea of juggling the forward lines is to try to get things better, try to shake things up, try to get a positive result, why wouldn't you try that with your defense every now and then?
The only thing we've seen is sometimes Oshiganov comes out for Hall or Marinson. That's really all we've seen. And obviously Gardner's injury or his back spasms over the past few days have allowed Marinson to get a couple of games in. For me, it's the fact that left side, every team kind of knows what they do now. And that's how Boston beat them last year. Everyone looks at the Boston boogeyman, which I think is overstated, and they say, oh, Boston beats them with toughness. It's not really the case. If you go ask Bruins fans how they feel about toughness in that team, like they think this is the softest Bruins team in a long time. No one in Boston believes that this is a tough Bruins team. The only people who think the Bruins are tough are Leaf fans who are upset with losing to the Bruins.
Yep.
I will also point out that the Leafs have a winning record against the Bruins if you combine regular season playoffs over the past 2 years, even more substantially over the past 3 years. They more often than not, the Leafs beat the Bruins. How the Bruins beat the Leafs in the playoffs last year was not by toughness. It was by the fact that they knew how to smother Toronto's defensive breakout. Because whoever was on the left side, be it Riley, be it Garner, be it Dermott, was either skating with it or they were trying to make a stretch pass. The right side, which for that year was Hainsey, Zaitsev, and Polak. This year it's Hainsey, Zaitsev, and Oshiganov. They're going for the chip and chase, or they're just flat out icing it.
Yep.
Oshiganov's a little bit better with this, and I think people saw at the beginning of the season, they're like, oh, finally, we've got a transition defenseman on the right side. But once teams kind of figured out what he was, you saw less of that. Now his transition play is passing to Dermott, and Dermott has to figure out a play in even less time, which probably explains why Dermott's struggling a little bit more right now, is because he's breaking out for two people.
Yeah.
So that's the issue. Everyone kind of knows what side to go up against for certain situations with the Leafs. I think you can take this group, and I think you can look to the guys you currently have in the press box, and you can arrange them into not necessarily an elite defense, but something that's a little bit more difficult for other teams to face. So the way I have it, because I've written about this at length on the Faceoff Circle.
Faceoffcircle.ca.
Yes. There's many articles on this topic. And it's a topic I care about when I'm saying things about defense. I'm a defense abolitionist. I would rather have 18 forwards. But
That's for another podcast.
Yes, I agree with you. We can do hours on that.
Oh my god! Stupid defense.
But yeah, it's the worst. Win every game 11-7.
Yeah.
But with this group, what I would do is I'd have those top two guys. I'd have Gardner and Riley on a top pair. Play the heck out of them. Give them the big minutes that you need to. They've been dominant every time they've played with each other since the beginning, since 2012-13 when Riley first came in. Whenever they're on, they control the shots, they control the goals. You know that works. Give them more minutes. Put them against a tough competition. Your second pair, you go Dermott Zaitsev. That's a little bit better. And then Marinson Hall, they were a great third pair for the Marlies. First pair for the Marlies last year, they can be a good third pair for the Leafs.
Love it. We got to go. We're done. And like, I have so many more questions. I wanted to talk to you about. I could have kept going as well. I could have talked about just analytics and how analytics feels about leadership, character, and toughness. We're going to do it another time. But for people, where can they follow you on Twitter?
At Jeff Veillette. So Jeff, V-E-I-L-L-E-T-T-E.
And faceoffcircle.ca.
Yep, that's the site. There's other places where you can find my stuff too, but that's where you'll find most of it.
Perfect. Hey, Jeff, really really appreciate it. I love different perspectives, different views of looking at the Leafs and life and social media and just all that world. So I appreciate you coming down to the National Club to do the Macko and Cause podcast. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Hopefully we'll do this again sometime.
Love to. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. I'll do my best version of Bob's of this.
Chick-chick-a. Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.